Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents We Are the Leaders We've Been Looking For by Eddie S. Glaude Jr., narrated by Eddie S. Glaude Jr. For My Dad, a story. Of the five black men who made it to heaven, one decided that he was going to try out the wings the angel Gabriel had given him. The other men told him to sit down and wait as Gabriel instructed them to do. Seated in golden chairs, they had received their robes and wings too. Heaven was their home now. A life of toil had been left behind. No need to disrupt things, simply wait until they were told what to do next. But one man insisted the wings were his, and he was going to use them. "Watch me skim around that tree of life without touching a leaf," he declared. "Watch me shoot right across the sea of glass and around the throne and right across God's nose without touching it. Just watch me." The others worried that he was going to knock over the delicate lamps and fine vases in heaven as he darted back and forth. He did, eventually, and God didn't say a word. He just looked at him. Gabriel returned, angry, snatched off the man's wings and told him, "Sit down until I tell you to move." The other men chastised him and said, "Look, now everybody got wings but you." The man smiled and said, "I don't care. I sure was a flying fool when I had them." This folktale from Zora Neale Hurston's fieldwork on the Gulf Coast is a different kind of story of black people who could fly. Typically, the tales center around the magical powers of enslaved Africans who longed for home. Flight is a form of escape from the brutality of slavery and its debilitating legacies. It is a spiritual journey home that allows for a different kind of self-awareness rooted in a past that one now possesses. Think of Milkman in Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon. For him, flight is both escape and descent. But in this story, slavery and the ugliness of American racism are not mentioned. The men are already dead and in heaven, and for what reasons we do not know. The ugliness of life is assumed. Ascent has happened. And what matters is the insistence on flying anyway. You must maximize your gifts no matter the cost. The wings were his, after all, and even when they were taken away, this black man relished the life lived even in death. He was a flying fool when he had them. Flight takes on a distinct resonance here. We still have the features of escape and ascent implied, at least, but in this folktale, flying is bound up with a certain idea of the self. And a way of being in the world that isn't about the past, but about the living. Do not let people, and most of all, don't let yourself crumple your feathers. I've come to see that this vision of flight shapes the view of black democratic perfectionism I commend in these lectures. I believed then, as I do now, the wings belong to us still. Looking back, the memory is a living thing. It too is in transit. But during its moment, all that is remembered joins and lives, the old and the young, the past and the present, the living and the dead. Eudori Welty. My soul looks back and wonders. The details are not hard to remember, at least some of them aren't. They haunt. And somewhere lodged in the cracks and crevices of the memories are indications of what was to come. Past as prologue, I guess, or as prophecy. I've avoided returning to these lectures for over a decade now. Perhaps the troubles of the intervening years have corrupted my attention. So much has happened since those 3 days at Harvard in September 2011 with friends and colleagues gathered, and with Henry Louis Gates Jr., oddly enough, sitting in a big, comfortable chair next to the podium from which I spoke. I became the founding chair of the Department of African American Studies at Princeton University in 2015. I wrote 4 books. Each of them found their beginnings in these lectures. My son grew into a grown man. Life happened, and it has not been easy. In between then and now, the horrors of this country and of our times, past and present, pressed in. The excitement of the Obama years waned as the bodies piled up like the images in an Alexander Gardner Civil War photograph. Police killed black people at an alarming rate. Americans witnessed only a fraction of it on video, but far more than we could handle. Some of the images have stayed in my head, even when new horrors nestled up beside them. The Tea Party ran John Boehner and Paul Ryan out of Congress. White supremacist organizations became increasingly dangerous. They rebranded themselves as the alt-right, and like a virus, infected the body politic with a more virulent and shrewd strain of a familiar and native disease. They made themselves known in Charlottesville as they marched and shouted, "Jews will not replace us," and left Heather Heyer dead in the street. More deaths would follow in El Paso and in Buffalo. Fear and panic grabbed hold of the country as demographic data revealed the browning of America and white people, at least those who felt they could be nothing but white, clung to their gods and longed for the days when people who looked like me knew their place. When I delivered these lectures, Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown were still alive. Breonna Taylor had just graduated from high school and was imagining what her future might look like. Eric Garner and Freddie Gray were alive. George Floyd had not moved from Houston to Minneapolis. Sandra Bland was still posting her video commentary, Sandy Speaks. Patrice Kallour's Alicia Garza and Opal Tometi had yet to post anything about Black Lives Matter. The Quick Trip gas station in Ferguson, Missouri was still doing business. And the Penn North CVS in West Baltimore served a community barely keeping its nose above water. Donald Trump seethed in the shadows. President Obama's jokes about him at the press club in April of 2011 left Trump red-faced with a clenched teeth grin. His rage joined with the anger of millions of white Americans and a smattering of others who believed they were losing the country. I could not have imagined then that the nation would soon elect someone so vile as its next president and that people would ransack the Capitol in his name. I was so confident white America would not elect Donald Trump that in 2016, I refused to support Hillary Clinton. I wanted a more progressive politics, vote down ballot and leave the presidential ballot blank, I argued in Democracy in Black, how race still enslaves the American soul. Force the Democratic Party to address substantively the circumstances of Black America in the aftermath of the Great Recession if they wanted our vote. We are more than cattle chewing cud, I exclaimed. I believe we had an opportunity to finally break the back of Clintonism, which was a mirror image of Reaganism. I was terribly wrong. Despite Trump losing the popular vote, the majority of white America voted for him and all hell broke loose. For 4 years, I watched a mediocre confidence man give license to greed, selfishness, and hatred, a combination that has distorted much of American life since the country's birth, and especially since the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980. A major political party morphed into an autocratic political force as its members either cowered before Trump or made explicit their own commitments that America must remain a white nation for the privileged few, with working white people as their shock troops. Once again, as is often the case when the nation confronts its contradictions, we witness the tricky magic around race, an alchemy that transforms fears and hatreds into scapegoats and eases the pain of a nation still uncertain about who and what it is. The so-called racial reckoning sparked by protests around police killings waned as white grievances and fears intensified. Donald Trump was at the center of it all, but he was not the cause. This was the ugly underside of the United States. Trump simply turned the country over so that all could see the shit hidden underneath. Ominous clouds gathered, and winds blew with triple fury. I could not imagine the scale of death to come. A global pandemic shut down the world and left over 1 million Americans dead, and black folk died disproportionately. I lost a close friend. He told us that if he got sick, he wouldn't make it. I attended his funeral virtually. The computer kept freezing. Grief stood still. Despite those clamoring for some semblance of normalcy, neoliberalism required that we get back to buying things. Nothing would ever be the same. People disappeared.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?